Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Globe Gazette for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. I am your reader, Peter Welch. Downtown housing approved. Council moves ahead to okay two projects to develop apartments. Development was the name of the game at the Mason City Council meeting on Tuesday night, where two projects got the okay to move forward. The first was another project to rehabilitate the upper level of a downtown building for rentals, this time at 15 North Federal Avenue, the office of local Edward Jones financial advisor Jason Gieving. On October 5th, Gieving and his wife, Nicole, were approved by the council to apply for a $500,000 federal community development block grant to create four apartments on the upper levels of the North Federal Avenue building, which they own. The state's Economic Development Authority approved the grant award in November. The grant award must be applied for and overseen by the city, so on Tuesday night, the council okayed a contract with the North Iowa Area Council of Governments to administer the grant funds, and also a development agreement with the Gearings, which, among other things, requires that three of the four apartments be leased for the next 3 years to individuals or families who meet federal low to moderate income limits. The Gievings joined at least two others in efforts to capitalize on the availability of federal grants to rehabilitate the upper level floors of the downtown building into housing. In January, Melissa Fabian, owner of Simply Nourished at 1315 South Federal Avenue, will begin work on the upper level of her building that she plans to turn into four apartments using the federal CDBG money awarded to the state as part of Congress pandemic relief aid. And before Fabian's undertaking, local dentist Jay Lala renovated the upper floor of the Northwestern Hall building on North Federal with the aid of Main Street Mason City, which applied for and received a grant on Lala's behalf. Seven new apartments came from that project, and all are filed with waiting lists. The other project, should it come to fruition, could potentially bring another apartment building to downtown. The council okayed rezoning seven parcels on the corner of Highway 122 and 65 South. The properties on the northeast corner of the intersection are empty and have been so for years. G8 Development, owned by Philip Chowder, had sought changing the zoning from Z4 multi-use to Z5 central business. The change would normally remove setback and parking requirements, but in this case, the city negotiated a rezoning agreement with parking conditions that mirrored those put into place for the River Building. The city's Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approving the change at its October 12th meeting. Jacqueline Arthur, the Laird Law Firm attorney representing G8 at the city council meeting on Tuesday night, said the developer's plan is to have commercial use on the main floor and residential units on three upper floors. A more specific plan would be developed once the council okays the zoning's change, she said. Councillor Joshua Mason wanted to know what the ramifications would be of not approving the zoning. Author said it would mean the project would remain in a more speculative state since the developer would not know what the exact restrictions would be on building. In other news, search yields 100 pounds of meth to arrested. Two men who failed to put a wide load sign on the back of their semi-trailer are likely deeply regretting that decision as they sit in the Cerro Gordo County Jail on Wednesday. According to court documents, filed in Cerro Gordo County District Court, an Iowa State Patrol trooper stopped a semi-trailer around 11:45 a.m. on Tuesday because it appeared to be carrying a wide load without a wide load banner. During an inspection of the driver, Juan Carlos Garcia's credentials, the trooper also had a canine do a sniff search of the outside of the truck, and the dog alerted on the passenger side axle of the truck. The trooper asked Ruiz Garcia if he and other troopers could search the truck. Ruiz Garcia acceded. A trooper found a glass meth pipe under the top bunk mattress and a tin that contained marijuana in a backpack on the same bunk. The Federal Drug Enforcement Agency arrived on scene and the semi was taken to a DOT shed in Mason City where the truck's load was removed and searched. Inside a jacuzzi were four duffel bags containing a total of about 100 pounds of meth, according to court documents. Ruiz Garcia, 51, of Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin, was charged with felony possession, with attempt to deliver, and failure to attach a drug stamp. He is being held on a $5,000 bond. Ruiz Garcia's passenger, Jamie Hurtado, 33, of Waukegan, Illinois, was charged with the same felonies as Ruiz Garcia and with misdemeanor possession of marijuana. He's being held on a $6,000 bond. And turning to other news, ventilators in state went unused. During height of the pandemic, only 9 were distributed to the hospitals. Iowa spent $10.3 million acquiring 500 ventilators before the worst months of the coronavirus pandemic, when hospitalizations and deaths peaked late last year. But just 9 of the breathing apparatuses were distributed to hospitals at the time. Hospitals have been aware of the availability of these ventilators since they were purchased, said Sarah Ekstrand, a spokesperson for the Iowa Department of Public Health. The goal of the state's pandemic response has always been to protect the health of Iowans and to preserve our health care resources. The ventilators were purchased in support of that goal. The early phase of the pandemic was a time of much uncertainty and supply constraint concerns. The state ordered the ventilators in March of 2020. The same month the first COVID-19 cases were identified in Iowa. By the time the devices arrived in late summer, hospitals had already scrambled to acquire ventilators during the first surge in hospitalizations that spring. Unity Point in Sioux City, for example, obtained additional ventilators from other hospitals. And the Iowa National Guard said Leah McKinnery, a spokesperson for Unity Point. These requests were made prior to the state of Iowa acquiring their additional supply of ventilators, McKinnery said. The Federal Emergency Management Agency reimbursed Iowa for the full cost of the ventilators, Ekstrand said. The portable devices cost more than $20,000 each and are manufactured by Ventic Life Systems in Washington State. They're capable of sustaining a patient's ability to breathe with a tube down the person's throat. But they also offer other, less invasive breathing assistance. The devices are larger than a basketball and weigh about 18 pounds. Earlier this year, as hospitalizations waned, state officials created an online survey to offer the remaining 491 ventilators to hospitals and certain emergency medical service providers. By November, slightly more than half of the ventilators had been distributed to about 60 different health care providers. The Mason City Fire Department, which is also the local ambulance service, regularly uses the three ventilators it received late this summer from the state to provide non-invasive assistance to COVID-19 patients and others who are short of breath. Previously, the department used its sole ventilator to transport critically ill patients between hospitals, said Carl Ginnap, the department's deputy chief, who directs the ambulance service. Now, medics can give advanced breathing assistance during all calls for help. It's been very, very useful for keeping people from having to be intubated after they arrive at a hospital, Ginnap said. It helps me sleep at night, said Suzanne Kuhner, the chief executive of Audubon County Memorial Hospital, which received two of the ventilators. It helps us keep people alive. She said the hospital already had three ventilators that are primarily used for non-emergency procedures, such as scheduled surgeries. The hospital hasn't used the new ventilators, in part because the county's infection rate have been comparatively low, but infections in the upper Midwest have been accelerating for weeks, and the threat posed by the Omicron variant looms. Henry Boone, 111 years of age, lived free in Mason City. In 1899, the Globe Gazette published this biography about Henry Boone. The recent death of Isaac Bracken in this city at the age of 100 years and 5 months recalls the fact that there is living in this city at the present time a man who has reached the advanced age of 111 years. This is Henry Boone, a colored man, who is making his home with his daughter, Mrs. L. W. Taylor, on Water Street. Mr. Boone was born in slavery in the state of Virginia, June 7, 1778, on the plantation of a rich Virginia planter named Sandals. He was a slave for 72 years and was never sold from the family of the original master. When his first master died, he went to Arkansas with Mrs. Blunt, his master's daughter, and remained there until he was liberated by General Curtis, by whom he was brought to the North and has remained here ever since. Mr. Boone is in remarkably good health and bodily vigor, and works around the house continually. He retains his memory splendidly and can remember distinctly the news of the death of George Washington, as he was at that time 11 years old of age. The War of 1812 found him a full-grown man, 24 years of age, and he says he can remember distinctly the thrilling occurrences of those times. In the old slavery times, the marriages of the slaves were arranged entirely to suit the convenience of their masters, and Mr. Boone has had 8 wives, nearly all of whom were sold away from him to some other estate. He's the father of 32 children by his various wives, 4 of whom are the children of his last wife, whom he brought with him to the North, and who died about 12 years. 2 of these children, Mrs. I. W. Tyler and Mrs. F. L. Palmer, are residents of this city. At the time of his last marriage, Mr. Boone was 70 years of age. General Curtis brought the old slave and his wife to St. Louis and then to Muscatine, Iowa, and he has since lived in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids. He came to this city about 3 years ago and has lived here ever since. He has never used tobacco in any form, but says he was accustomed to the use of stimulants as they were served to the slaves by their masters in the days of slavery. He expects to live for many years to come and will no doubt live to be one of the oldest men in the country. And let's turn to some other local news. Belmontine gets probation for role in robbery stabbing. A Belmontine whose role in Mason City's robbery and stabbing was to hold the victim down, was put on probation for 5 years on Wednesday. Dominic Lee Fogarty, 17, pleaded guilty to 2 counts of felony willful injury. In exchange, judgment was deferred, and Fogarty will serve the probation, undergo substance abuse and mental health evaluations, and follow any subsequent treatment plans, and pay the county crime victim compensation program $4,513.87 in damages. A civil penalty of $1,025 per county was suspended. Fogarty, Jaden Edle, 18, David Gordon, all of Belmond, were with friends around 6:30 p.m. on April 1st in the 200 block of 15th Street Northeast when a fight broke out, according to court documents. Police say Fogarty and Edle held down 2 victims while Gordon stabbed them both repeatedly. The 3 then stole property belonging to the victims. The 2 victims were later taken to Mercy, North Iowa, where the hospital was locked down while the 2 underwent emergency surgery. All 3 initially pleaded not guilty to the charges. Edel has since pleaded guilty and is awaiting sentencing on January 5th. Gordon continues to reassert his innocence and is scheduled to go on trial on January 25th. Have you got a tip that you'd like to share? We're committed to reporting stories that help our readers contact with their community, especially breaking news and matters of public safety. If you see news we should report, please consider becoming a part of North Iowa's local journalism efforts. You'll find a new link on our website's navigation menu labeled News Tip. Tapping that link from your smartphone, tablet, or computer launches a short form that allows you to send news tips or story ideas directly to our editors. The news tip form requires you to submit a phone number and email address, and we will not publish the information, but it will help our editors verify the news tip or seek additional information. News tips cannot be submitted anonymously, and also we cannot guarantee news coverage on every tip or story ideas. The news tip feature is not for press releases, letters to the editor, obituaries, or advertising. Please use the normal channels for that content. Also, readers may continue to contact journalists directly by phone or email. News tip is just an additional way for you to communicate with us. And in Today in History, today, Thursday, December 9th, the 343rd day of 2021, there are 22 days left in the year. Today's highlight: on December 9th, 2014, U.S. Senate investigations concluded the United States had brutalized scores of terror suspects with interrogation tactics that turned secret CIA prisons into chambers of suffering and did nothing to make Americans safer after the September 11th, 2001 attacks. On this date, in 1911, an explosion inside the Cross Mountain coal mine near Briceville, Tennessee, killed 84 workers. 5 were rescued. In 1917, British forces captured Jerusalem from the Ottoman Turks. In 1958, the anti-communist John Birch Society was formed in Indianapolis. In 1962, the Petrified Forest in Arizona was designated a national park. In 1965, A Charlie Brown Christmas, the first animated TV special featuring characters from the Peanuts comic strip by Charles M. Schulz, premiered on CBS. In 1987, the first Palestinian Intifada, or uprising, began as riots broke out in Gaza and spread to the West Bank, triggering a strong Israeli response. In 1990, Solidarity founder Lech Walesa won Poland's presidential runoff by a landslide. In 1992, Britain's Prince Charles and Princess Diana announced their separation. The couple's divorce became final in August of 1996. In 2000, the U.S. Supreme Court ordered a temporary halt in the Florida vote count on which Al Gore pinned his best hopes of winning the White House. In 2001, the United States disclosed the existence of a videotape in which Osama bin Laden said he was pleasantly surprised by the extent of damage from the September 11th terrorist attacks. In 2006, a fire broke out at a Moscow drug treatment hospital, killing 46 women trapped by barred windows and a locked gate. In 2013, scientists revealed that NASA's Curiosity rover had uncovered signs of an ancient freshwater lake on Mars. 5 years ago, the White House said that President Barack Obama had ordered intelligence officials to conduct a broad review of election season cyber attacks, including the email hacks that rattled the presidential campaign and raised fresh concern about Russia's meddling in U.S. elections. South Korean lawmakers impeached President Park Geun-hye over an explosive corruption scandal, a stunning and swift fall for the country's first female leader. And in other local news, McNider Museum to host annual holiday gatherings this weekend. The McNider Art Museum in Mason City will host holiday gatherings on Friday and Saturday, December 10th and December 11th. The festivities begin at 5 p.m. on Friday with McNider Off the Clock, featuring a performance from Mason City trio The Hats. The night will include wine and hors d'oeuvres, according to a press release. McNider's annual holiday open house will be 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. The day will be filled with children's make and take projects, such as ornaments and wreaths. The open house will also include a visit from Santa Claus, calligraphy artist Kathy Vicks, and a reading of "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," presented by Mason City Mayor Bill Schickel. Kids will also be able to write letters to Santa for special delivery to his mailbox. Holiday cookies and punch will be served. McNider's Art Museum is located at 303 2nd Street Southeast in Mason City. And now, let's turn to North Iowa area escapades. Here are just a few of the events and the shenanigans and goings-on worth checking out this week in the North Iowa area. Friday, December 10th, bake sale at Hampton Senior Citizen Center. Stock up on a wide assortment of holiday baked goods. The sale will start at 9 a.m. and will end at noon, or if all items are sold. Staff picks at McNider Art Museum in Mason City also on Friday, December 10th. The staff members of the McNider Art Museum were all asked to choose three works from the museum's permanent collection that they liked and wanted to display in the exhibition. Staff picks works in this show are grouped by staff member so that visitors can get to know the people behind the scenes at the museum through their artistic choice. The exhibition is available for touring during normal business hours through February 5th, 2022 in the Center Space Gallery, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Tuesdays and Thursdays 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. The museum is closed Sunday and Mondays and legal holidays. And in other events coming up here Friday, December 10th, Christmas Skate with Santa and the Grinch at Roller City in Mason City. Join Roller City from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. for a Christmas-themed evening of your favorite Christmas songs, themed snacks and games, and more. Meet and take photos with Santa and the friendly Grinch, too. Admission is $9. Buy a child admission, get a parent in free. And on Saturday, December 11th, Jingle Mingle Jamie Crawl at Main Street, Mason City. jingle and mingle with your family and friends as you bar hop your way throughout downtown Mason City. Pick up your Main Street Mason City Jingle Mingle Pass for only $5 and get special access to discounts at your favorite bars and breweries. Events begin at 5 p.m. and ends when the bar closes. Get more fun details and buy your tickets at MainStreetMasonCity.com. Also on the 11th, on Saturday, the Hot Sardines at North Iowa Area Community College Auditorium in Mason City. Join NIACC for a roaring 20s of Christmas. The Hot Sardines infuse Yuletide classics with their unique twist on jazz from the area of Prohibition and beyond. From beloved chestnuts like the White Christmas to lesser-known gems like Edith Piaf's Lenore de la Rue, the Hot Sardines bring in the holidays with plenty of surprises along the way. Tickets start at $20, and the performance begins at 7 p.m. And also Saturday, December 11th, Close for the Holidays at the Windsor Theater in Hampton. Enjoy a live performance of Close for the Holidays. The show is a heartwarming story about a group of strangers who find themselves stranded at a community center due to a blizzard. The December 11th show is at 7 p.m. and December 12th at 2 p.m. I forgot to mention also that there is an event on Friday, December 10th, the Holiday Tour of Lights at Heritage Park in Forest City. Celebrate the holidays with family and friends by taking a cruise through Heritage Park of North Iowa's drive-through Christmas light display. Admission is free. Will cash donations. Also on Saturday, December 11th, Christmas Crafts and In-Home Business Show at Willowbrooks Mall. Crafts and in-home businesses will be showing and selling their items as unique Christmas gifts from a 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Check out what they have to offer and get your Christmas shopping done early. Also on the 11th of December, meet Santa at Willowbrook Mall. Take the kids to see Santa from 10 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Make sure to bring your phone or a camera to take photos. And other activities on December 11th include the 12 Dancing Princesses at Stebbins Children's Theater. Reimagined by Tom Ballmer and Ryan Deere, this Grimm's classic is staged in two places, a kingdom of the Middle Ages and the modern United States. This refreshing take on an old tale features excellent dancing, a great sword fight, and a fascinating timeless tale. Performance on December 11th starts at 4 p.m. and on December 12th at 7 p.m. Admission is $11 for adults and $8 for students, 18 and under. Go to StebbinsCT.com. I'll spell that also, StebbinsCT.com. Or you can call 641-424-9802 for more information. And yet more activities for Saturday, December 11th. Holiday Extravaganza at Fat Hill Brewing in Mason City. Those at Fat Hill hope that you are ready to get into the holiday spirit because they have a full day of festive activities planned for you. We've had Santa's hats, a sleigh's worth of winter beer, bartenders in truly awful ugly sweaters, and a 12-foot Christmas tree. Doors open at noon. From 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. will be the local business holiday gifts fair, followed by the Come and Go Ugly Sweater Contest from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. The Rochester Piano and Trombone Duo, Eric Huxenchoven and John Severs, bring an evening of Christmas jazz to Mason City. The Cozy Show will feature a mixture of jazzy popular tunes and jazz standards, so it's a great event for seasonal jazz fans and holiday music fans alike. Ugly Sweater Contest ends at 11 p.m. and no admission fee. Also on Saturday, 11th, Holiday Christmas Show with the Holy Rocka Rolls at Wilcox Performing Arts Center in Algona. Get into the holiday spirit and enjoy music from the Holy Rocka Rollers. Tickets are $20 for adults, $10 for students, and $15 for seniors. Tickets are available at the Chamber Office, Brown Shoe Fit, Hy-Vee Customer Service Counter, and online at www.algona.org. The show is from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. And finally, Sunday, December 12th, Skate with Santa at Mason City Arena. Join Main Street Mason City and Mason City Youth Hockey Association downtown from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. for a free community skate at the Mason City Arena. Entrance for the event will be through the Mercy One lobby, the south parking lot entrance only. Cost is donation of one non-perishable food item or cash donations per person. Proceeds collected are for the Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. Enjoy open skate with Santa Claus and Christmas movies playing on the giant scoreboards. Bring your own skates or free rentals will be available with food bank donations. Skate rentals sponsored by Mason City Youth Hockey. Time limits will be in effect for skates. Mason City area concessions will be open and available for purchase. You're listening to the reading of the Globe Gazette for December 9th, 2021 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Terry Lee Seifert, age 35, has passed of Mason City, December 3rd, at Mercy One North Iowa. No services are planned at this time. Fullerton Funeral Home is taking care of all the arrangements, and they're located at 123 2nd Street Southeast in Mason City. And you can call them at 641-423-8676. You can also go online at www.fullertonfuneralhome.com, Facebook/ Fullerton Funeral Homes. James Terry, age 70, of Clarion, has passed on December 7th at Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames. A mass of Christian burial for James will be held at 2 p.m. on Monday, December 13th at John's Catholic Church, St. John's Catholic Church, rather, at 608 2nd Avenue Northeast in Clarion, with Reverend Jerry Blake officiating. Burial will be held at St. John's Catholic Cemetery in Clarion. Visitation will be held on Sunday, December 12th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Ewing Funeral Home at 1801 Central Avenue East in Clarion. Divine Mercy Chapel will begin at 3:30 p.m. with scriptural wake beginning at 4 p.m. And you can go online at www.ewingfuneralhome.com, and they are located at 1801 Central Avenue East in Clarion. And you can also get a hold of them at 515-532-2233. Robert Bob Lind has passed at the age of 83 of Mason City on December 7th. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 13th at the First Presbyterian Church, rather, at 201 Willowbrook Drive in Mason City, with Reverend Paul Collier officiating. Visitation and public viewing will be from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, December 12th, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, and they're located at 126 3rd Street in Northeast Mason City. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the First Presbyterian Church in Bob's honor. And again, the Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel is located at 126 Street, Northeast Mason City, and you can call them at 641-423-2372, and you can also go online at colonialchapels.com. Richard Allen Morris, Richard Allen Morris passed on November 2nd of 2021 at his home in Grove, Oklahoma, with family by his side. A celebration of his life will be held on December 12th, 2021 from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Moose Lodge, and they're located at 22 4th Street in Northwest Mason City. Dinner and live music provided by musician friends to honor Rich and his band. And finally, David Smith of Clear Lake has passed at the age of 69, and that was on Sunday at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. A memorial service will be held 11 a.m. Friday, December 10th, and will be at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel. They're located at 310 First Avenue, North Lake, in Iowa, with Chaplain Mark Dobell officiating. He will be laid to rest beside his wife, Pam, in Clear Lake Cemetery. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel is located at 310 First Avenue in North Lake, and they can be contacted at 641-357-2193 or go on colonialchapels.com. And let's go to some other news. Pfizer touts its booster. Pfizer said Wednesday that a booster of its COVID-19 vaccine may offer important protection against the new Omicron variant, even though the initial two doses appear significantly less effective. Pfizer and its partner, BioNTech, said that while two doses may not be strong enough to prevent infection, lab tests showed a booster increased by 25-fold people's levels of antibodies capable of fighting off Omicron. For people who haven't yet had a booster, the company said two doses still should prevent severe disease or death. Health authorities in the U.S. and other countries have urged eligible people to get a third dose even before these results. Go and get your third boost as soon as possible, says Dr. Mikkel Dolsten, Pfizer's chief scientific officer. This is comforting and a very positive message that we now have a plan that will induce immunity that is likely to protect from infection, symptomatic illness, and severe disease from now across the entire winter season. Pfizer and BioNTech tested blood samples taken a month after a booster and found people harbored levels of Omicron neutralizing antibodies that were similar to amounts proven of protective against earlier variants after two doses. For the lab test, researchers grew samples of so-called pseudoviruses that hold the worrisome new mutations. Scientists don't yet know how big a threat the Omicron variant really is. Currently, the extra contagious Delta variant is responsible for most of the COVID-19 cases in the U.S. and other countries. But the Omicron variant, discovered last month, carries an unusually large number of mutations, and scientists are racing to learn how easily it spreads, whether it causes illness that is more serious or milder than other coronavirus types, and how much it might evade the protection of prior vaccinations. Pfizer's findings, announced in a press release, are preliminary and haven't yet undergone scientific review, but they're the first from a vaccine maker examining whether the booster doses that health authorities are urging people to get may indeed make a key difference. Moderna and Johnson also are testing how their vaccines may hold up, but health authorities will be closely watching for real-world evidence of how Omicron spreads in highly vaccinated populations. If it becomes dominant and causes serious illness, then regulators will have to decide whether vaccines should be tweaked to better match Omicron's changes to the recipe that manufacturers already are beginning just in case. Separately, federal health officials on Wednesday authorized a new COVID-19 antibody drug for people with serious health problems or allergies who can't get adequate protection from vaccination. And in other news, lower biofuel requirements draw GOP ire. A decision by the Biden administration to retroactively throttle back requirements for the volume of biofuels blended into the nation's gasoline supply drew scorn from ethanol producers and Iowa Republican lawmakers. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency on Tuesday lowered annual production requirements for ethanol and other biofuels to account for reduced demand as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. The EPA has proposed cutting and giving oil companies more time to meet both 2021 and 2020 blending requirements, citing delays and reduced demand from halted travel during the pandemic. Former President Donald Trump left office without setting the 2021 requirement, meaning refiners have yet to make required purchases and would receive a break. At the same time, the administration moved to reject requests by 65 small oil refineries to be exempted from ethanol requirements, saying that they had failed to show exemptions were justified under the Clean Air Act. EPA and White House officials said the EPA's actions reflect the administration's commitment to strengthen the Federal Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, following years of mismanagement by the Trump administration and disruption to the gasoline market stemming from the COVID-19 pandemic. And U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack on Wednesday announced the USDA will make up to $800 million available to support biofuel producers and infrastructure. That includes $700 million through CARES Act funding to provide economic relief to biofuel producers and restore renewable fuel markets affected by the pandemic. Additionally, the department will make $100 million available to increase the sales and use of higher blends of bioethanol and biodiesel, Vilsack announced. Under the leadership of President Biden and Vice President Harris, USDA is providing direct relief to the people of rural America who are still reeling from the economic impacts of the pandemic, Vilsack said in a statement. The relief we're announcing today will pave the way to economic recovery for America's biofuel producers, stimulate a critical market for U.S. farmers and ranchers, and move the country closer to President Biden's goal of net zero carbon emissions by 2050. The Renewable Fuels Association, an ethanol lobbying group, called the retroactive reduction of the 2020 targets unprecedented and contrary to EPA's past policies and practices. And in Des Moines, Iowa COVID surge sends record number to ICU. Hospitalizations reported by the Iowa Department of Public Health increased Wednesday as the state continues to experience a surge in coronavirus cases, leading to more people being treated in hospitals, higher numbers in intensive care, and more deaths. Hospitalizations increased at 7.5% from the Monday update to 777 patients, with 185 people requiring ICU care, up 14% from 2 days ago. The number of hospitalized patients is the highest since December 14, 2020, and the ICU census is the highest in a year. Seven unvaccinated children age 11 or younger are hospitalized. Three children between ages 12 and 17 are hospitalized. Two are unvaccinated and one is fully vaccinated. The state report shows 6% of children age 5 to 11 in Iowa are fully vaccinated. Overall in Iowa, 57.5% of the population is fully vaccinated, placing the state 24th in the nation, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC also reports that nearly 37% of the state population has received no vaccine. Iowa has experienced 1,897 confirmed cases per day over the past week, the highest daily rate since December 11, 2020, according to CDC data. The state reported an additional 105 COVID-19 deaths, saying they occurred between October 12 and December 1st. That raises the state total to 7,550 deaths. And finally in the news, man accused of stalking woman shot by police. In Iowa Falls, a man stopped by police Wednesday morning for reportedly stalking a woman he used to date was fatally shot by officers when he displayed a gun and tried to flee the stop, according to police. The fatal encounter happened in Iowa Falls shortly after 7 a.m. Wednesday when police, Hardin County Sheriff's deputies, and the Iowa State Patrol responded to a call for help from the woman, the Iowa Department of Public Safety said in a news release. The woman reported that a man was stalking her by following her in his car. Officers who arrived at the scene said they saw the man run his vehicle into the woman's car. Police then ordered the man to get out of his vehicle. He refused, police said, and displayed a shotgun and tried to flee. That's when police shot him, officials said. Police did not immediately release the man's name. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation is investigating the fatal shooting. The deadly encounter led Iowa Falls School and Ellsworth Community College in Iowa Falls to cancel classes on Wednesday. And let's now turn to sports. Knights bond stems from ball movement. Nearly every player touches the ball Tuesday night. Jerry Gatton had no choice but to let out a small chuckle. Newman Catholic's boys basketball coach and his staff doesn't keep track of how many passes per offensive possession his team has. If it was going back to my days playing basketball, maybe it is something we would keep track of, Gatton said with a smile. When the Knights are in their half-court offense, you'd be hard-pressed to look at a possession with under five passes. Every player on the court, on nearly every possession on Tuesday night, touched the ball at least once, even when Newman Catholic went deep into its bench when the contest against Nashua Plainfield got out of reach. Having that connection on and off the court, we feel it's a big part of it, junior Max Burt said. It has been better this year, especially tonight. I don't think it was ever bad, but we're getting a better feel. The Knights had to face a zone defense against Nashua Plainfield, the first zone they faced this season, and weaved their way around it due to plenty of passing. They made several extra passes that led to high-quality looks, evident by the 46.9% night they had from the field. You can't think it is going to be pass, then score, Gatton said. Sometimes it is too many passes, and there's time I'm like, shoot the ball. If you get a better shot out of it, that is good too. In Gatton's 4 years, only once has Newman Catholic not had over 300 assists as a team. In four games, it is averaging 17 assists per night on 50% shooting from the field's game. There are several avenues as to why the Knights have amped their ball movement early this season. One prong is the experience they have. Four of the five starters are back, as Burt called this, a mature team. We knew we'd have to stop it and play our game, he added. I feel like we did a pretty good job of that tonight. Another angle is the relationships Bert, Doug Tyler, James Jennings, Bennett Sundkin, and others have in not only basketball, but other sports as well. They all have played together long enough to know the strengths and weaknesses each person has. I feel like we trust each other a lot, especially this year, Taylor said. Even when teams plan man-to-man defense, Newman Catholic has still excelled in ball movement. It registered 24 assists on 32 made field goals against Bishop Kerrigan in the second game of the season. A lot of it comes from playing hard defense, Bert said. If you have a wide open shot, percentage goes up. You have more energy, and it feeds off each other. The Knights know the season is still too early to see if the wins they are pulling up will be maintained, more specifically the margin. The preseason favorites in the top of Iowa East are the unbeaten team in the conference. They know in order to get to Wells Fargo Arena, one of the primary reasons will be that ball movement and passing that has led to plenty of open looks. We're getting together better, Taylor said. We're trying to get the best shot possible, which has worked out really good for us so far. And in other college basketball sports, ISU ready for Cy-Hawk showdown, Cyclones stressing habits over hype versus Iowa. Iowa State senior big man George Condit IV cleared his mind and released the past. As the fog from three mercurial seasons lifted, the 6'9" forward from Chicago found what he needed the most, a clean slate this season, a fresh start, a wholly new approach to the game, thanks in part to first-year head coach T.J. Ostberger's habit-based system. It's a fun game, but I kind of took a different look at it this year, said Condit, who was speaking about Thursday's 8 p.m. ESPN2 Cy-Hawk matchup between the number 17 Cyclones and Hawkeyes, as well as basketball in general. I'm not trying to really focus in and lock in or change anything I've been doing. This year has been great to me. I've tried to do everything I can to the best of my ability, and I'm just going to go out and do the same thing. He's free. He's not overthinking. He's also more productive in the paint than he's ever been, a trend that must continue if Iowa State's 8-0 is to snap a three-game skid against the Hawkeyes' 7-2 and 0-2 Big Ten before a sellout crowd at Hilton Coliseum. My approach is the approach that TJ instilled in everyone, said Condit, who was one of two ISU players to see the floor in last year's blowout loss to Iowa. We understand that the game can get chippy, and we understand that they're going to try to get in our heads, and they're going to try to grab us. They're going to try to do everything they want to do. We just got to go out there and play our game. And if we play our game, it'll show. Iowa leads the nation in turnover percentage at 10.9. The Hawkeyes play fast, efficient basketball, which correlates to an adjusted offense. Ken Pom ranks fifth nationally. The Cyclones counter with the fifth best turnover percentage defense at 27.2, which helps fuel an uncharacteristically solid adjusted defense rating that's slotted 40th best in the country by KenPom. So, we've entered something's gotta give territory. Certainly, that's the battle, right? Ostberger said. They've done a terrific job. They're number one in the country at turnover percentage, and they're averaging over 90 points a game, So that's certainly their identity. At the same time, we're confident in our identity, which has been ball pressure, turning people over, speeding people up, causing them to make decisions under duress, taking charges, rotating from the weak side. So my guess would be that they're going to come into the game and try to do what they do. And we're going to come into the game trying to do what we do. And we'll see how all of that goes. And that does it for today's reading of the Globe Gazette for December 9th, 2021. I'm your reader, Pete Welch. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.